So good morning, everyone. So how's the conference going for everybody? Good parties last night?
Awesome.
Wherever you happen to end up? Anybody remember where they ended up?
No.
Okay, that's usually a good sign. So my name is Brian Smith. I'm a senior escalation engineer for Microsoft. And what I'm going to be talking about today is my first impressions and our team's first impressions supporting Project Server 2013 and Project Online. Now, most of this is going to be sort of skewed towards Project Online and trying to help you understand from a support experience sort of what happens at our end and how that can sort of help you to help us if you've got issues that you're sort of working with. So that's sort of the focus of it. It's not going to be heavy in demos. I'm going to show you a few things behind the scenes, not real behind the scenes because we're not allowed to go there. Well, I'm allowed to go there, but I'm not allowed to sort of put it on the screen and show you that I'm going there. That's the key difference. But I'll try and sort of explain how we can work and what we can see and what we can't see, because I think that'll be useful to help you understand, both from a sort of security and privacy point of view, but also just to sort of let you into some of the challenges in supporting an online environment. And talking to some of our partners, how many partners in the room? Okay. How many customers? Who's not going to put their hand up regardless of any question I ask? Okay, good. Just got to get the level set there. So particularly partners, I think sometimes it's very difficult sort of moving into the online world that you sort of think your partners, you're working with a customer, you're helping them with the deployment, you're helping them with the configuration and everything else, but then suddenly you feel, you know, that your hands are tied when it comes to a problem because you can't do the normal things that you want to do. We can do some of those things for you, so you know, never be afraid to open a support incident to try and get help from us to help your customer. And we can sort of work through some of those problems. And certainly, you know, customers as well, you know, we're here to help. Every time you see something that looks as though it's not working how it should be, then you know, don't hesitate to sort of open that support incident. One slight sort of level set on that, one of the things that we're not is your administrators. So we're here to help and we're here to tackle support cases, but you'll sometimes get us pushing back a little bit if it gets too much of a sort of teaching you to use the system. I mean, usually we're happy to sort of do that thing and we will do that kind of thing. But if we find that we're getting a lot of that, then we need to sort of help you to become successful by getting the right information to do that kind of sort of just general administration stuff yourself. The stuff that you can get to that you can do, you should be able to do. The stuff that is broken or you can't get to it and you need us to do something, then that's what we're there for. Yep, question there. Yep.
And obviously you can get rid of the bits underneath the hood, and so it could be a subject you think the same level as previous purchases. I think it's going to be helpful for partners and for us, and maybe some customers, to really understand the difference between what you can do on the on-premise deployment.
Yep. I'll be covering some of that, Kevin. Yeah. The question was, I'll just repeat it, I'll be covering this kind of things. It'd be very useful to understand if you've got sort of Project Server 2013 sort of on-premises, you've got your own system, how does that compare to what's running in the cloud? How are the bits different, what's different, and so on? Depends which day you ask, so it's a very difficult one to answer. But I'll talk about that kind of thing as we go through and explain why that is sometimes challenging, not just to you, but you know, sometimes challenging to us as well. Yep, we probably keep the questions to the end, then you'll know what I haven't answered and we can sort of ask questions based on that rather than preempting the slides. Yeah, thanks. So we're going to talk about learning from our first impressions and sort of how we started off the support process for Project Online. What's changed over the first year? I'll be drilling a little bit into on-premise to online comparison. Part of that's from a feature set, but also sort of talking about how the sort of version changes compare. And how we in the support organization support the application. So my key takeaway, and this is sometimes, you know, even internally at Microsoft, we sort of get this confusion where people sort of use Project Online and Project Server 2013 interchangeably. And Project Online is not Project Server hosted. It is nearly Project Server 2013 hosted, but there are some key differences in terms of features and so on. So, you know, I mean, a typical one is, you know, why have you disabled notifications in Project Online? Well, we haven't. They were never there in the first place. You know, it's a feature that's not in that area. It's something we get a lot of feedback on, and it's something we'll be sort of taking consideration on how we sort of could achieve that going forward. But in terms of that feature, it wasn't there, so we haven't taken it away. I know it's just terminology, but it sometimes helps to sort of think of the two as separate. And particularly as we move forward, there may be things that sort of start diverging a little bit more as we sort of go through the next year of Project Online. The other key takeaway there, customers are more successful when they work with a partner for their first online experience. If you're familiar with Project Server, you've come from even 2007, 2010, then there's not going to be any surprises there. So, I mean, I'm not saying you can't do it on your own. There's certainly every opportunity and to do it on your own if you're familiar with the platform. But if you just sort of pay your subscription, you've never seen Project Server before, then you know, it can be quite a steep learning curve to work out how all the configuration needs to happen. And there's partners out there that have done this a ton of times for hundreds of customers and can make that sort of pain-free to sort of help carry you through there. So it's the dawn of a new day. This slide was put together before I knew what dawn of a new day would actually mean on this day, that my boss's 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 boss has got a new boss. But so the slide's apt for that as well. But the real intention of this slide was, you know, Project Online is new for all of us. I've been playing around with it for quite a while before it was released sort of externally, but it's still a new experience once it sort of gets out into the wild world and sort of understanding how things are going to be working. So the timelines, late 2012, we released Project Server 2013. And then just about a year ago, February 2013, Project Online was launched. People keep asking, how's Project Online going? It's always very difficult to tell with a new release. We tend to see a different adoption in different size organizations. So, you know, usually the larger the organization, the longer it'll be before they sort of get onto the new platform. You know, from a Microsoft perspective, they might have already own it if they've got an enterprise agreement. So in terms of the sales numbers, it might be that we've sold plenty of it, but we're not seeing users on it. Project Online has been no different to that, really. We saw most of the early uptake was very small users. Now, they weren't necessarily just small organizations or small teams, but it was just departments of large organizations or even, you know, sometimes large departments of large organizations kicking the tires and getting a feel for it. And from the keynote, you found that's something that's sort of open to all of you as well. You can sort of sign up and play around and see how that works for you. We've seen steady growth. I think we're pleased with what's sort of happening out there. I'm a support guy, so I don't know the real numbers, but from everything I hear, you know, it's going in the right direction. We're certainly seeing some bigger customers coming on as we progress, so you know, it's good news for us. And you know, the general information about Office 365 and how that's working for Microsoft is very positive as well, so that's all good things. I want to talk through a few of the resources that are available to help you if you're sort of going into the Project Online. In the first place, we've got TechNet. We've got a lot of user assistance stuff on there. If you've been to any of the Chalk Talk sessions, it's the guys there that helped us sort of put that together. But one of the key things that we've done in terms of these resources is learnt as we've gone along where we've got gaps and where we need to change things. And sort of to step back a little bit, for the first probably 9 or 10 months of Project Online being released, all of the support incidents were coming through to the team that I'm on. So all of them were coming through to tier 2, tier 3 straight away. Not just in the US, but also the escalation team in Europe were sort of working at that level. The reason for doing that was so that we could sort of get visibility of just what was going on and understand the kind of calls that were coming in so that we could sort of react very quickly to those kind of things. You know, whether it was a technical issue that we needed to get something fixed on, or whether it was some confusion out there, we could sort of respond quickly. And the biggest area that we found in the early calls that were coming through was some confusion around the product itself. In terms of somebody goes on and they buy a project online, they seem to think they were getting Project Professional that runs on the web. You know, perhaps they thought they were getting something like the Excel web app or whatever, but it was that confusion of, you know, I've signed up for this, but I'm not sure this is really what I wanted. So probably in the first couple of months, we were seeing perhaps 60, 70% of the calls coming in were that kind of thing. So we reacted to that pretty quickly and introduced the sort of new TechNet documentation and even built that into the product itself. So the link to the TechNet documentation is in the sort of getting started links within PWA. But the other things that we were doing around that was trying to make the purchase more sort of streamlined to try and cut off the wrong turns. So trying to make sure when people were purchasing either Project Online or Project Pro for Office 365 that they were getting what they expected. So what I've said, Project Online is not Project Server 2013. You know, that's the good way to think about what you're getting when you sign up for Project Online. You're getting the server. And then if you buy Project Pro for Office 365, you're getting the client. So functionally, it's equivalent to having Project Professional 2013, but it's just delivered in a different way, and it's constantly updated as well. You can use Project Professional 2013 to connect to Project Online. So depending how your organization's set up, you don't have to sort of buy the both bits together. You might find that deployment of the MSI is easier for your organization than necessarily going the click-to-run route for the client. So you can sort of mix and match in that respect. The other big issue we were seeing in the early days was that people would already have Office 365 and they'd sign up for Project Online and they'd find out they'd end up with two tenants because the way of buying wasn't that obvious that you should sort of go into your existing tenant and then add the new one. And people were just sort of buying the new one and then finding out, well, I've got this domain and I've got that domain and my users are over here. And so we had a lot of issues there where we were having to sort of deprovision PWAs and get the customers to sort of buy again to link it through to the right place. So again, we changed the purchase process to help people understand that and hopefully not go down that wrong path. So we were sort of working with the marketing group, working with the product group to both get those changes into the product itself to help people use it and help people get started, but also to get it into the marketing collateral as well, so you'd sort of know sort of what you were signing up for and the way you needed to sign up for that. So we added the new sort of getting started link so you can get sort of straight to the TechNet documentation and lots of sort of easy ways of sort of moving through the product. So when you got started, it would sort of step you through what you really needed to do. The other thing we've been doing since the start of Project Online is we've been changing stuff. In the keynote, we're saying, you know, we're putting things in every month. Now, sometimes there are things that, you know, you won't see, it's just happening in the background. There might be some performance tweaks or bug fixes, whatever. Sometimes there are things that you see, like changes in the tiles on the front. Some of the feedback we've had on that is, you know, it's nice to get the new features. It'd be nice to know before we got the new features that things were going to change. And again, that's feedback that we've been sort of considering how we work with that. I did a blog post recently on the most recent changes, sort of the day it happened, which is sort of several days too late for a lot of you. But going forward, what we want to do is work with the product group to get that information out there. Now, whether that will be on the product group blog or whether we'll put it out through the project support blog, you know, we'll find a way of getting that information out there. Because it's, I think, for you know, Facebook looks a bit different, then everybody's angry about that, but it doesn't really matter because it's just Facebook. But you know, we're talking about business applications here where you've got sort of procedures and processes in place, You've got manuals, you've got books, and I think, you know, it's only right that we should be giving you a heads up on, you know your users may see this sort of change coming through over the next few weeks. We can't always be that accurate on when they'll see that change, because we do sort of roll things out, sort of time-facing. And we roll things back as well. If any of you were sort of using Project Online two Thursdays ago, was it? I can't remember. When we pushed out the new sort of introduction to adding new projects, we had a new sort of wizard-based thing for sort of walking you through adding your project and so on, and choosing your EPTs. It was more sort of a panel of your EPTs rather than a drop-down going to the name. And we had an issue there where we pushed some new bits out and they conflicted with some of the old bits. And if you were using the old style, just sort of new basic project plan, and then you put in the project name and you click next or finished, I can't remember, I think that changed as well. You just see the spinning cycle. And it was actually had worked, everything was working okay, it was just the refresh of that page and the sort of callback to that page that was broken. And we hadn't picked that up in the sort of pre-release stuff that we were doing. I mean, I must admit, I'd seen it. I was working on some stuff probably for the project conference the day before, doing all this kind of stuff. And I probably just got impatient and went and looked, and, oh yeah, my project's there, and just carried on without thinking that it's broken, just thinking, you know, I couldn't wait. So we should really have picked that up before it got out to you guys, because I was seeing it in our sort of internal system a couple of days before that. But the good news, and I think this surprised a lot of our customers, was, you know, following on from sort of getting some information in that, you know, this doesn't look right, I could repro it. I pinged off to the product group, raised an escalation on it, and probably within an hour and a half, throughout the world, that was fixed. So, you know, some customers were, how'd you do that? You know, it's quite impressive. I think that's the first time in the public Project Online that we've had to do that. And to be honest, it should have happened quicker. We found a few flaws on the way through as we were trying to press the big red button and make that sort of problem go away. So, you know, we learned from that particular, we learned quite a bit from that particular episode, from the fact that it shouldn't have happened at all, but we also learned that once it happened, we could easily sort of turn it back again and get that right. So you should be getting the new experience again sometime soon, but for some reason they've locked down any changes to the system for this week, because people demoing just didn't want those surprises. I guess it's okay to inflict it on you, but we don't want to suffer from that. But I'm not doing too much of a demo, so it's not going to catch me out. So going into the new stuff, so over the year, we've added the button for downloading Project Pro to Office 365, another big call generator for us. Now, I've purchased this thing. How do I get it? And you have to sort of go through the admin center and various clicks to find it. We've now put it sort of right on the getting started bar, so you can sort of find where to download that. We've got the sort of new Project Online, which will take you to extra information about sort of getting started. We've added the new capability to create or import projects, which sort of walks you through it a little bit more. It doesn't sort of leave you sort of lost wondering, you know, how do I start using this thing? The Project Center. I mean, one thing we didn't really sort of think through was, okay, somebody lands on this page and it's just empty. They've got no idea, particularly with the ribbon sort of nicely stays out of your way so you can't see anything. And unless you sort of get that to come back, you don't work out, well, how do I add a project? So we change that experience. If the Project Center's empty, then it gives you these choices. It says, you know, perhaps your view isn't showing you any projects, or do you want to create a project? So we're trying to put prompts in all the right places to sort of help you understand sort of how to use the product. This is the one that came and went, so you will see this again sometime. And I think this is quite useful. We've had a lot of feedback on the, particularly for customers that have got quite a few EPTs, the drop-down where it shows you a few and then says more and then shows you more can be quite, you know, if you've got sort of a dozen EPTs that you're using regularly, it's not a particularly good experience. I like that approach in terms of being able to easily sort of create new projects. On the task side, we've added some new features within the sort of ellipses in Project Center to allow you to do some extra things from there. So you can go in And up, step back, wrong slide, or wrong build. The timeline, the first time you create a task, it puts it on the timeline. The first one is on us, so it adds it to the timeline just so you can feel and see what the experience is. So you'll know, oh, right, yeah, okay, I can see that. I can decide when I want to add other ones. And then you can also, from the task, go in and see sort of more information based on the ellipses as well. So whether that's opening up the task, removing it from the timeline, creating a subtask under there, sort of more functionality that's sort of built right in rather than having to sort of just go into sort of full edit mode to achieve some of those things. And then the ellipses in the project center, which is the one I started talking about three builds ago, we've now added the ellipses there, so you can very easily get in and go in to edit the resource plan or build the team or go to the project site directly from the ellipses in the project center. I was unsure whether delete was good to put on that drop down. I'll find out whether I was right or wrong as we go along. I expect I might hear some feedback on that one. But obviously it's only going to delete things if you've got permissions to delete things, and we trust that you know you are adults and you know what you're doing, so it's there. Sorry, I think... I'm pretty sure it does. I think the question was, will the delete show if you haven't got permissions to delete? Most of the things in SharePoint are trimmed based on permission. So I must admit I haven't tried it, and I don't like saying yes thinking it should when it might not. But yeah, I think generally we cut those things out if you haven't got permissions to do them. And the other thing we've added, I didn't get screenshots of these because my particular instance isn't in the right sort of state for this, but if you're signing up for Project Online today, what we'll do in the admin center is actually show you sort of a highlight thing of how to get to the getting started and so on. Because one of the other things we heard was, yep, I've signed up for it, I've got it, but you know, where is it? And the project is sort of hidden under those ellipses, or you have to go into admin and the SharePoint sites. You know, that it's hidden away, so we've now added some extra text that stays for 30 days after you've purchased on the sort of the Office 365 Admin Center. And there's also a new link on the quick launch as well there. Final point on there, the email that goes out when you sign up, if it hasn't already changed, it will be changing very shortly. Because again, that was a very sort of bland, thank you for your business, here's your URL, get on with it. I'm paraphrasing, I don't think it actually said that, but... We've now put sort of more information into there that sort of gives you links to places to find help. Our project support blog, I think we're sending out a link to that so you can sort of get information as it's published out in that direction. All of the TechNet content we've got out there. So I think we've made quite a few really good changes over the first year of Project Online. Getting back to Kelvin's question about, okay, so that's all changed. How do I know how that matches up to Project Server 2013 that I've got? A lot of these changes will get into the sort of core product at some time. I mean, I haven't seen the timeline for when each individual piece gets in, and whether some of these will, probably some of the early stuff that changed may be in SP1 that's coming along. Some of the stuff that's arrived more recently certainly won't be in SP1. Doesn't feel like the kind of thing that would go into a service pack either. And in some respects, some of the things we've changed aren't as applicable to a Project Server 2013 environment as they are to Project Online. So there's not a sort of a big push to really sort of keep parity. So on the support side, when we're opening bugs against whether it's Project Server 2013 or Project Online, sort of a hotfix request for instance, we'll go through that process of, okay, we've got this problem in Project Server 2013. Are our Project Online customers going to hit this? We need to fix it there as well. Or we've got this problem in Project Online, is this something that our Project Server 2013 customers are going to care about as well? An example of that is OData. We hit an early issue in OData. I'll be talking a little bit about it in some of the later slides. We hit an early problem with OData where if you've got multiple multi-value custom fields, you could end up getting sort of mass duplication of your rows in your OData feed. There's a bad join in the query at the back end, and basically it was just returning a lot of data that didn't really need to. Now that's something we found fairly quickly, we could fix fairly quickly and online, but the decision was, well, we won't put that fix into Project Server 2013 unless somebody specifically asks for it. We've got the fix ready, we can put it in, but you know, if you don't need to fix something, then we generally don't, just in terms of the risk of regression and all that kind of thing. Because the thought is OData is the key driver for Project Online reporting, but it isn't something that generally our Project Server 2013 customers are going to be using in their on-premises environment. I mean, even the stuff you saw in the keynote, which is really cool with the SQL Server integration services, you can use all of that on-premise and you could point it at OData, but you wouldn't because you could use SQL Server integration services directly pulling from the reporting tables in the database. So, you know, even if you're working with Project Online and Project Server 2013, all your reports can be the same, and the bit sort of to the right of SQL Server integration services can all be the same, but it wouldn't make much sense to connect to OData when you can connect directly to the database. So for some of those reasons, we'll make changes in one environment and not in the other environment. Yeah, good question. The question was, apart from the sort of the bug I just mentioned, will the experience be the same in Project Server 2013 in PWA as it, if you're in the Project Web App in Project Online? Generally, it's going to be the same. There'll be some of these features that I've been talking about in the what else is new that are in PWA in Project Online that haven't yet made it to PWA in Project Server 2013. Most of those things will do. So it's almost like Project Online is sort of smoothly adding all these features, and Project Server 2013 is sort of going along, doing some catch up, going along, doing some catch up. And I'd imagine there'd be, you know, sort of a level set round about the service packs is when I expect to see the catch up happening. But just because of the timelines of the fixes going through, you know, SP1 goes through months and months of testing. There's been a beta for it running since, I don't know, November, December. It's virtually ready to go. The final testing is there. There's a few sort of last minute bugs that different teams are thinking about trying to get in there, that kind of thing. But obviously it's been around a while. So some of these kind of changes I've talked about here wouldn't meet the bar for getting that into SP1. You know, you go to a code review and say, oh, we've got this nice thing where we want to sort of add this, and the teams that are sort of triaging SP1 just wouldn't take the risk of adding something which they think, you know, as trivial, I mean, that in code terms, they wouldn't want the risk of sort of adding that extra potential problem to SP1. So when the service packs come out, it will never quite catch up with where Project Online is going at any time, but good question. Other resources to assist customers. I mean, we use blogging as the quick channel to get to our customers. We're probably ahead of some of the other teams within Microsoft in terms of the support organization driving blogging. We've probably been doing it for about 7 years or so. I started out on my own blog on the left-hand side there. More recently, we've switched over to using the project support blog on TechNet. The one on the right there. So all the new news about sort of what's new and the on-premise stuff on cumulative updates, we'll tend to be pushing that out through the project support blog. I still tend to do sort of some blogging on my own, and then I'll do pointers every few weeks to, you know, go and look at this stuff. Because I know there's people that might subscribe to mine that haven't yet subscribed to the project support blog. And it's been running a bit longer, so you know, it tends to come a bit higher up the search engine as well if I put it in mine compared to the ones that are in TechNet. There's plenty of other good blogs there as well. I mean, we had an upgrade on our TechNet platform recently, and I lost the blog role from the TechNet one. It's still on my blog, but most of our MVPs that have blogs are listed on that sort of panel on the left-hand side. So there's some great content there as well from MVPs and partners. So that's a good way of us getting information out very quickly, like the you know, what's new, that kind of thing. So this is probably where we'll want to do it as a support organization. We're certainly trying to encourage the product group and the product marketing group to also, you know, use their ways to market as well. Office has had a major revamp on their blogs recently, so I think that's probably, you know, that would be a good place for the what's new. But we'll always try and get ahead of the game here as well for the project support blog. So I'm going to do a quick comparison of sort of project online and project server. You've heard the term, an Englishman's home is his castle. That's not my castle. Now, there's quite a lot of content out there to compare online to on-premise. There's a very interesting white paper from one of my colleagues, Emmanuel, who's sitting in the audience, so I better mention that and not say anything nasty about it. I had about 5 minutes of stuff to rubbish it, but you know, I'm not going to be able to use it now because he's in the room. But now, that is a great white paper. Rob Bauer's Online and On-Premise Solutions for Project Server 2013, so again, good, some good comparisons there of the two. Steve Hayden, who's also in the audience. I don't know if Rob is in the audience? Yeah, he is, yeah. So we've got the authors of all three of these things in the audience, and I didn't know they would be here when I put this slide together. Yeah, so Rob's here, and Steve Hayden's here as well in the fourth row back on the right-hand side, Hitchhiker's Guide to Demand Management. So there's some great articles there that give you some comparison information. I pulled some key stuff out. I think this is from Emmanuel's one. Changed the colors because we like green at the moment. So some of those sort of differences that you've got between the two, if you're not aware of what the differences are. Obviously, in online, you can't get direct access to the reporting database, so you're going through OData. I think the announcements at the keynote are fantastic in terms of how you can run the kind of things you want to run, the sort of SSRS and that kind of thing, or you know, potentially you could even be pulling that stuff out and building OLAP cubes. You know, I think that's a really sort of great move and a great opportunity to really enhance the reporting aspects of Project Online. The good thing about the... I'll come back to that. So you can use OData for online and on-prem. To my mind, why would you on-prem? The OLAP database, yep, you can now do that via OData. SQL Server reporting services, again, via OData. I think when Emmanuel put this document together, the via OData sort of hid a big ton of work that you'd need to actually do to make it do something with OData. The announcement with the SSIS stuff has really made that mean something. It's certainly a good point there. Excel 2010 with Power Pivot, Excel 2013, Excel services work against both platforms. TFS integration currently only online through the sort of client side. There's some work coming on at the moment to do sort of tighter integration between those two, so you can expect to hear some more about that. The line of business integration. There's a few different ways of sort of achieving that, whether that's through OData or whether that's through CSOM or apps. You know, there's plenty of different ways of sort of getting into that area. One question we get often is that there's Exchange integration, and Exchange integration is okay if you're all on-prem or you're all online. But one thing to note in the area of Calendar OOF integration, which is a sort of a, I don't know, who's aware of Calendar OOF integration? Okay, a few of you, mostly Microsoft, but partners as well. If you put in your calendar that you're going to be out of office for more than 4 hours, that will get passed through from Exchange to Project as a calendar exception. So you can sort of use that for non-working time, sort of instead of necessarily going in through administrative time in timesheets and doing it that way. That's only available on-prem. I know they're sort of looking at the online side of that, but currently that's only if you've got on-prem Exchange and on-prem Project Server 2013. I'm going to talk a little bit about the support experience. I probably sort of touched on this in some of the earlier slides. But you know, it's a very new challenge to us in the sort of project team. SharePoint have been doing it a while. They had obviously a lot of experience with BPOS. There was also obviously a lot of experience out there with some of the stuff that we'd done with Exchange hosting, that kind of thing. But in project, we took a few different directions than our SharePoint sort of counterparts. We're a smaller team, and we can tend to sort of do things in slightly different ways. We come under the SharePoint org in a support sense in the structure, but we're sort of a different team and do things our own way. And quite often we find that SharePoint learn from some of the stuff that we're doing because we have to sort of think through things in a slightly different way. So obviously we did a lot of training with our people on sort of how what they could do, what they couldn't do, get them sort of knowledge of what the differences were. Even though everybody's been trained and everybody knows the differences, I will for certain be asking some of you for the ULS logs. And you'll come back and say, but we're online, we can't get the ULS logs. So forgive me, I'll reply to emails internally. I'll say, well, get the ULS logs. They're online. Oh, yeah, I saw that. We've been trained, but sometimes it doesn't seem like it. The getting total visibility of the customer experience is going back to getting all of the cases coming through to us for the first sort of 9-10 months. Since then, we've got sort of new resources in Mumbai, in India, who are taking a lot of the frontline stuff. So they tend to be taking a lot of the, if you like, the low-hanging fruit of I bought the wrong thing, I need a refund, and they'll sort of work with the sort of business side to sort of make that happen. And helping with the sort of how-to type questions that are coming through if people are sort of confused about how to get started, where they get various things. If you've got a project online case and you're working with our frontline team and you think they're not doing what they should be doing or they're missing the point and it's more serious than they seem to think it is, ask them to escalate. You know, they're a new team, they're very good. I've spoken to all of the people on the team. We've had our experts out there training them. I think we've got a really good bunch of people with great skills, but they're new to Project Online like the rest of us. And sometimes there's things that happen sort of with Project Server, and it's not too important, and you can sort of try this and try that and try something else. And that's fine if it's like one customer system. Well, it's not fine if it's been done incorrectly, but you know, if it's one customer who's having this particular issue. But every case that comes through, we've got to think, you know, we've got hundreds of thousands of users around the world who might be hitting this same problem. Is this going to affect everybody else? And then we need to make sure that that's escalated really quickly through to the tier two, tier three, and the product group. I mean, when it starts moving, it comes through pretty fast in terms of ringing people's phones and getting them out of bed. But we need to make sure that we're catching those from the front line. So if you ever feel that something is not really registering with the support engineer you're working with, ask them to escalate, and then they can sort of push it through. The other thing, we've got the Project Online Forum. We're currently sort of reworking how we work on the forums in terms of trying to point more of our resources towards getting that information on the forums, sort of validated, getting answers out there, making sure that people know what the answers are. So we're working with that along with our MVPs. I know there's a few of those in the audience. I think Gary's checking his email, so he's probably not listening, but. So the key thing with the forums, I'm finding a lot of times that with search at the moment, it seems to be making a very good job of finding forum posts. But if all you're finding is somebody asking the same question as you, that's not too helpful unless somebody's actually answered it. So we're trying to make sure that the answers are out there. If the answer's already there, then we want to make sure that we're sort of validating it. Because sometimes you'll get a posting and somebody will take a guess based on, you know, insufficient information. It might be the right answer, it might not. The original person who posted may never come back because they solved it on their own. So sometimes we're guessing as well when we say that's the answer. But we like to try and validate sort of what's going on in the forums and make sure that it's good, accurate information. Because that's, when I'm searching for stuff, I tend to obviously use Bing. There is some other search engine, but I haven't come across it yet. But I do find that it's finding a lot of the blogs, obviously, but it's finding a lot of the forums as well. So because of that, I know you guys are finding the forums too. So we want to make sure that the quality is out there. The final point on the top bit, we need to be nimble when things are going wrong. Like the other morning when the page wasn't refreshing properly, we can get it pulled back down very, very quickly. Or if we need to get a fix on, we can get that done very quickly as well. So what's different with the online experience? We're finding that we're getting a different type of caller. And I must admit, I'll put my hands up, I edited this slide. A lot of what I'm showing you is a session I did at one of our internal technical conferences about 6 months ago. So I've updated it. Some of the stuff I had to take out because it was sort of internal and it was stuff that we couldn't talk about externally in terms of our processes and all that kind of stuff and data centers and what have you. So I did have the word immature in there. And I was going through my slides last week and I was thinking, but I think you'll get that maturity and project management isn't anything about insult or anything like that. But we are finding that the sort of the project management maturity of the people that we're talking to and also potentially the technical abilities of the people we're talking to is not quite the same as our normal on-premises premier customers. We're often talking to the IT help desk in a large organization. And we're finding with Project Online, it can be quite a small organization who are mainly just sort of project managers. They went for Project Online because they don't have the technical skills. And that's the whole purpose of it. So we're learning from that as well and realizing that the people we're talking to, we need to talk the right language to be able to sort of get through to them as well. So that was a sort of a key learning in the first few months that we're going through there. We obviously can't ask for the databases. We still do because we forget, but we don't do that too often. We do have access to diagnostic views, and I'll be showing you a little bit of that as we go through. And then the final point on there, that the whole hotfix and update process is sort of totally different from the point of view of online compared to on-premises. Usually, if there's a key fix that we really need to get out to everybody, it's going to be in online and it's going to be in a cumulative update. But they will get into online very, very quickly. We had a recent one that's going to be in, going to be released probably shortly after SP1, but we actually got it into online Wednesday of this last week, and it's right through all of our farms, and everybody's patched and ready to go. But that was a bug that we only actually got signed off and fixed probably about 4 days before that. So if you think about the hotfix process of, and if you've submitted a hotfix request, you know that it can sometimes get into, like, not the next CU, but the CU after that. And then because we skipped the February one, potentially you could have put a fix request in October, November, and you're not seeing the fix in the on-premises cumulative update until October. So that's one of the things we're able to do very, very quickly in the online environment is get those fixes right through and get them sort of fixed quickly. I think I've covered probably most of these in terms of understanding, getting started, permissions. Click to run was one thing that we had a bit of pain with early on, and they've done quite a few technical changes to that since the release. I mean, that's not anything specific to project. It's used by sort of obviously Excel and Word and the sort of Office Pro SKU. But we were finding that there were potential problems if you were on low bandwidth. Where I live is a little bit out in the country, and our bandwidth at home is very low, so I experienced some of these firsthand. The other thing is just the way the click to run runs. If you've got Office Pro and then you load Project, it sort of goes back and then comes again. So it's sort of, if you sort of think it's broken halfway through, because you might even see your icons disappearing from the taskbar, and then you've got to add them back again afterwards, which is annoying. I don't know if they're going to fix that, but that's not my area of expertise. But some people were then sort of stopping it midway, thinking, this isn't working, you know, I didn't expect it to do that. And if you stop it, then the recovery wasn't very good either. So you'd sometimes have to find, you'd have to do the fix it and delete everything and then load it all on again. So, you know, sorry for some of the pain that you sort of felt there in the early days. From what I see of the case volumes coming through, that seems to be a lot better now than it was sort of in the early times as well. The other thing we saw, and this, some of this was pre-release as well. Pre-release of Project Online, we had the ability to, you could sign up for a trial. And when we released, we kept that open probably, I think, for a few days. I think we had a sort of certain number in our head of how many sites we wanted to put into that sort of trial process. And that was sort of blocked off soon after that. One of the reasons we blocked, well, two reasons we blocked it off fairly early on. One of them was that people were signing up and not using them. I mean, we looked at Project Online information from the pre-release, and it's just amazing how many PWAs were provisioned and they had no projects in them. And it was like, you know, there's obviously overhead to us, so it didn't look like good value. We couldn't obviously always know why there weren't any projects in them. Was it the fact that they couldn't get started because of some of the things I've spoken about earlier on? I don't know. It's very difficult for us to sort of get feedback on, you know, why there were so many sign-ups but nobody seemed to actually be using it. The other thing that we introduced after the release was sort of assisted trials. So you can sort of sign up with a partner and then they can get a sort of proof of concept up for a period of time to help you get started, so point you in the right direction and give you some advice about how you want to move forward. So that's sort of the direction we'd be going there. I think there might be some changes coming up in that direction as well with some of the sort of technical things that we've done at the back end. We may be able to sort of loosen up a little bit on that. But I didn't say that, in case, if anybody asks you. In terms of the infrastructure, there's probably a bit less that I can talk about in this audience than the one that I spoke to on the internal side. I actually sat through an Office 365 deployment session on Sunday, which was one of the pre-conference sessions. Anybody else in that session? Yep, on there. And that was pretty good. But you know, it's like, okay, how many data centers have we got? And I think the answer was between 10 and 100. So that sort of narrows it down. And there's, apart from the data centers, there's lots of other things throughout the world that sort of give good connectivity between the different regions and the data centers. And before anybody asks me, I've had the question already this week that Australia isn't necessarily getting the best service from Project Online as it ought to be. But you know, I'm not fully conversant with where those challenges are, but that's what I've heard back from a few of our sort of partners in that region. I'm sure you never get this many people in a data center at one time. I think I just sort of put people in the picture because it was a little bit more human, but I don't think we have real people sort of walking around in those kind of things. But one of the things I learned on the session on Sunday is we can deploy a new sort of mobile server, it's a farm, I guess, with 4,000 servers in it in 8 hours. And it's just sort of like delivered. It's got all the services built into it. So you're not putting it in a building. You're just sort of, you've got an open park somewhere and you just sort of fix this up and plug in the water supply and the electricity and everything else. And away it goes sort of 8 hours later, and you just turn it on and get moving it. So there's some interesting stuff that we're doing there in terms of how to grow the data centers. Because one of the challenges is the sort of density increases. Sometimes the building that you've got is the constraining factor, that you know you want to raise the floor because you need to put more cabling through, but you know you can't raise the ceiling easy enough, so you can end up sort of getting squashed out. So some of these sort of new techniques of being able to just sort of put a trailer in and it's got all the stuff in it is quite interesting. Obviously all the data center players are doing very similar things. I don't know if anybody's seen in the news, I think it's just sprung up again. I saw it in Google a while back, but the Google have got a ship off the coast somewhere which has got a lot of stuff on it. Everybody was wondering what it was, and I think they did finally come out and say, you know, it's sort of a data center and it's lots of these sort of farms in containers. So we've got data centers in sort of North America, the Far East, Europe, and generally when you sign up, you'll be saying where you are and it'll get put in somewhere near you. We do sometimes need to fail over to another region. We had an incident probably, trying to think when it was, October time, where there was a problem with a fiber cable just off the coast of Brazil, and we had to fail over the customers there to one of our US data centers. But you know, it just happens. They weren't down for very long. You know, it was very quick to mirror them over to the other data center and get them up and running again pretty quickly. So there's lots of infrastructure in there to make sure that you're not sort of suffering too much when anything like that happens. We also have a lot of internal customers in Microsoft using Project. Some over there. Hi, Brad. And I mean, it's great for us. I mean, one of the things historically with Microsoft is, you know, back in the days of 2002, 2003, we haven't necessarily been great users of Microsoft Project within the organization. And that's changed over the years, and a really big sea change has happened with Project Online. In fact, we've got an entire farm that is supporting all the instances that are used within Microsoft. And the term, if you haven't even heard the term before, dog fooding is sort of using our stuff before you have to use it. So we try and sort of iron out the bugs and get things working before you sort of see any of the pain. And there's two aspects of how we use that internal system. The first aspect is that we can obviously push the bits out to those farms before we push them out to the outside world. They're in the same data centers as you. They're not in anything special. They're in the same sort of places, but they're just sort of segregated. And we can push the bits out to them, and then we can monitor how that goes, if there's any problems, and if it's okay, we'll sort of push out to the wider world. The push tends to happen in slices. So, you know, we might push out to one particular data center to just 2% of the users. If that goes okay, we might increase it up to 50% of the users in that data center. We might then push up to 50% in all the data centers, and then finally to 100%. So we're monitoring it as it goes, because it's obviously a challenge to say, okay, we push out to this 2%, but what if we're just unlucky and that 2% of users aren't big users of the feature that we've just patched? So we try and take it slowly, because we can sort of pull back at any time. Term we use internally at Microsoft is stopping the train. So we've got this train going through patching all these things, and at any time we can just go to a web page and click a button and stop the train. I've not had to click that button yet. The button to undo something is slightly less of a problem than stopping the patch going out to everything else. I hope I don't have to press it, but if I need to, I need to. I think I've covered off most of the things on this slide. Wave 15 was another issue that was catching us early on. The term might not mean anything to you, but we tend to have numbers for our releases. So 2007 was Office 12, 2010 was 14. They didn't like 13 for some reason. And then the new stuff is Wave 15. One of the challenges was we needed to tie into Exchange as well. And a lot of our online customers had Exchange, perhaps had BPOS, and before they could run Project Online, they needed to be on the latest bits. So that upgrade process has taken us quite a while to get completed. I think there's still a very small percentage that haven't been upgraded. I think there were some particular challenges with certain considerations on Exchange for certain features customers were using. So I think there are just a handful, but I've not had any support cases, certainly that I can remember in the last sort of 5 or 6 months, where somebody has not been able to buy a Project Online because they're still on Wave 14. So how do we support our Project Online? Now, what's our view of your tenants? And I mentioned diagnostic views earlier on. So we've got various ways we can interact with the farm. So we've got various PowerShell commands we can use to get the ULS logs. We've also got another server that we cache the ULS logs to. So from all the servers worldwide, we'd be pushing the logs to one place where I can go in and I can query across the logs. And I can put in a particular event ID. I can put in a time. We're advised if we're going to put in a time, that we're going to get 2 gigabytes of logs for every minute that we put in. So you probably want to filter on something else as well. So generally, we're sort of filtering on the farm. So we know what farm it is. We can put the ID in. That name is also in all the server names. So by putting in the network and the farm numbers, we can sort of limit to just seeing the web front ends or the app servers that happen to be in your farms. And we can search on sort of text as well. So if we know we're looking for a permission denied or something like that, we can put that in and sort of get the logs back again. And that will just sort of run in the background and email us with the link when that query is done and we've got the logs back. We can also go to a share on any of the servers and look at the logs physically, because the logs that come off to the cached log system all have their PII scrubbed. So there's nowhere in there can I see a project name, a resource name, a username, or anything. It's all GUIDs, it's sort of hash characters, so there's nothing in there that I can see. If we absolutely need to, we can get to the raw ULS logs, but only connecting through our telemetry boxes, which needs a smart card, it's two-factor authentication, and then we can't move any PII information out of that particular area. We can't cut and paste from those boxes. So it's very secure in terms of how we can interact with that stuff. But the diagnostic views are a very sort of interesting concept. And when we were coming up to the release of Project Online, Project Server 2013, we were working with the product group and sort of talking about our support experience. And it's somewhat different to SharePoint, because we're working with a business application rather than a platform. So we've been working with sort of the project database for a lot longer than sort of SharePoint have been working with their current databases. And we're familiar with what's in there, what's not in there. And we often use the database to be able to run our diagnostics against. So if you're familiar with the P12 AC tool or P14 AC tool, they're things that we used to send out to customers so that they could sort of run them against their databases, and it would look for stuff that we know is an indicator of something being broken. It would also give us information on, you know, database fragmentation and all those kind of things. And we said to the product group, okay, so we can't get into these databases. How are we going to run these diagnostics? So we came up with this approach where we added a whole different schema to the database called DIAG. And within DIAG, it shows you a PII scrubbed view of all the different tables in project. Initially, we went to the product group and said, okay, these are the key tables we want to look at. But then, not knowing what problems we might run into and what diagnostics we needed to extend to, they ended up putting DIAGs in for all of them. And SharePoint are considering doing the same thing on their side as well, having seen what we can do sort of on our side. So we've rewritten the sort of P12, P14 AC tool diagnostics so we can actually run it against the tenant database and pull back that kind of information. So if we know there's a particular problem we're looking for, whether it's an orphan baseline or a missing record in the reporting schema is causing a problem when we're publishing, then we can sort of run diagnostics to sort of trap those kind of things. If we need to do anything about it, then obviously that gets harder. If it's something that you can do, you know, okay, just unpublish that project and republish and everything will come good, then fine, we'll work with you to do that. If there's some kind of data issue at the back end that we may need to fix by running a script to delete some records or whatever it might be, then we have to go through a lot more peer reviews and through a different team of people to actually get those scripts executed against specific databases. One we had to do this with a while back, just trying to remember when it was, probably October, November, we had an issue where if you provisioned a PWA in a non-US language, or non-English language, I should say, they're very similar, I've heard. If you provisioned in, I forget what the one that caused us a problem was, it might have been, I'll say French. I know it wasn't French, but I'll say French, for example. If you provisioned in French, what you'd get was actually mostly French, but if you're familiar with Project Server 2013 and language packs, it was more like an English site that you'd applied a French language patch to, which is predominantly French, but column headings, the word home on PWA, there's a few telltale signs that tell you that it's not just pure French. Custom field names, because obviously we don't tend to translate the custom field names to their foreign equivalent if we load a language pack. So what we needed to do in that case, we worked out what the bug was and what the problem was, but we needed to rewrite a lot of the tables that contained the language information. So the product group came up with some scripts to be able to do that and then had to sort of go through what we affectionately call the kiosk, which is basically a group of guys in a building in Redmond that have more access to the systems than we do in support. I mean, I can connect to the telemetry boxes and I can look at the diagnostic views. I can go to a share that's got the logs on it. I can run a limited set of pre-approved commands that might do something like, you know, restart one of the web front ends, check to see what services are running, all those kind of things. But when it comes to actually touching data, there's a very high bar in terms of the sign-off that has to be done to get those kind of things to happen. So I equate it to this sort of the lock. The lock is that it's secure, but sometimes from a support perspective, it looks like we're looking through the keyhole to sort of do the diagnostic stuff. So this is just an example of the, sort of the diagnostic views in the database. I was going to take you into sort of SQL Management Studio and show you them, but you can probably see them better on here than you can anywhere else. This is sort of an example of one of the queries I had to work on to try and work out what was going on the online environment. And you can see that, you know, everything's GUIDs. There's no sort of text there. There's no resource names. There's no project names. There's no task names. We can't reverse it, so I can't sort of run anything to tell me what that project name is with that particular hash value. But if the customer gives us the project name, I can generate a hash value, and then I can see if that hash value exists in the database. So that can sometimes be helpful, or other times we'll go back to the customer and say, you've got a problem with project AB12C13 and so on. And then, you know, if you add that to the project center view or whatever, there's ways of helping the customer to find out what that really means. So I probably talked about this anyway. RFC and kiosk are our ways to get things done that we don't have the permissions to do. And they have to go through a level of peer review to allow them to happen with the product group. I mean, it's not a peer review between people in support. It's something that me or Adrian or HN would sort of put through as a request. And then whoever's the on-call engineer for project would engage with the feature crew for that particular feature to get permissions to be able to do what we've asked them to do, or come back and tell us that, no, you can't do that. But I mean, which sometimes happens, or they know a better way of doing it, or, you know, we might find a different way of fixing it. I'll skip the demo because I'm running short on time, and I did want to leave some time for questions. But I mean, it's not anything that the demo was really showing you about the database and the diagnostics and all those kind of things. But just summing up before we sort of go to questions, in terms of helping us to help you, the key things we need are exactly what time did this thing happen. If you get a correlation ID in the error message, you know, can you give us the correlation ID? Sometimes you'll get a message come up and you won't see a correlation ID in a message box. But if you look at the URL, you'll see that the correlation ID is actually part of the URL that it's showing to you. So again, there's different ways the correlation ID might show up. So, you know, when you open the call, if you can give us as much information like that as possible, then we can sort of go behind the scenes and try and find out, okay, what was happening at that time? What does this correlation ID point to? If you're used to Project Server 2013, I run the query against this server that's got, you know, 25 terabytes of data hitting it every day, and it comes back and says, no return data. So, you know, sometimes there still are those things where a particular correlation ID won't really tell you anything in the logs. And generally those are things that the correlation ID is bubbled up perhaps from the UI, and it's at a verbose level, which isn't really applicable. So, you know, we can't find it. We can actually turn the logging up. It defaults that it'll only stay up for a minute before it'll come back down again. So generally, if we've got something really critical we need to sort of get you to repro, we can run one of our PowerShell commands at the back end to say, you know, on these farms, on these servers, for this category, turn the logging up to verbose at this time for this long. We can't do it for more than a minute. It'll just drop back anyway if we don't specify a time. So we can push the logging up and then get you to repro, and then we can sort of pull the logs after that. So we can still get at sort of things that aren't coming through correctly as well. So I've been speaking probably far too much, but I hope that's given you an idea of how we work with Project Online. I think we've got 8 minutes and 33 seconds left. There's a microphone just next to the projector. If you could use the mic because we're recording it, so it'd be good to get the questions recorded. Sorry, VBA macros. Well, if you're running, if you're specifically talking about a VBA macro, then you're running that in the client. But what, am I missing the question there? Yeah, I mean, the VBA is actually running in the client, so you can do VBA in Project Pro for Office 365 in exactly the same way that you could in Project Professional 2013. We've actually used that for some of our sort of testing. I know some of the partners are probably using that for some of their sort of migration scripts and that kind of thing. You could put a load of MPPs in a directory, and through VBA, you could save and publish those to Project Online. So yeah, VBA is just as applicable in the online environment as it is in the on-premise environment. A good question, thank you.
Well, I've been seeing a lot of issues with the technical project core level, but we're running through trials at the moment, so a number of clients see the dialogue pairs without any useful messages, being able to problem, I'm not really coming across as a lot of helpful against a lot of without wanting to diagnose the features, whether you've seen a lot of those issues.
I thought that issue was get going down, and I fully appreciate that sometimes people hit the issues and they just get fed up asking about it and we stop hearing about it, but it doesn't mean it hasn't gone away. So that's good information for me. One of the problems that we saw was with low bandwidth downloads were causing issues. Sometimes customers weren't leaving it long enough and were thinking it hadn't worked and were rebooting and that was stopping it. Right.
Yeah.
Right. The way it works, it has got some sort of auto recovery capabilities that if it senses that the bandwidth is low, instead of doing the normal streaming click to run install, it will sort of revert to an MSI install where it will do the full download and then do a sort of a normal install of the bit. So it's still the same sort of patchable online governed thing, but it will do that. There is also a way of, I think, forcing it to do that. So you can download, rather than going through the like the click to run install, you can actually download the installation bits and run them locally. But certainly get the customer to open a support call. If they're not getting any traction with the front line, then send me an email, brian.smith@microsoft.com, because I want to know if we're still seeing that and where we're seeing it. And off the top of my head, I don't. It's not something. One of my colleagues had worked more on the click-to-run problems we'd seen early on, so I knew some of the issues, but I certainly wasn't aware of all of them. But it's good to know. Well, it's not good, but it's good that I know. It's bad that it happened. But yeah, thanks for that. Okay. We've got 4 minutes left. If there's any other questions. Yep.
Are we going to have to wait for that slipstream salt package
I don't know. I know the support's there. I wasn't aware of how that will be delivered and whether it will need the slipstreaming package to do that. I can certainly follow up on that one. Again, if you ping me an email, just as sort of a reminder on that one, I can check into it and get an answer for you on that.
Okay. The other thing I was curious about is, are these data centers where SharePoint
online, they certainly are. Yeah, I mean, they're certainly hosting Project Online and SharePoint and Azure and Bing and Hotmail and everything else. Most of the data centers will cover the full workload like that. Quite often, certainly in the early days, there were probably only three data centers where Project Online was running. So potentially, if you were deployed into one of those data centers and you're already using Azure that was in one of the different data centers that didn't have Project, then there might be times when you're not co-located. We have ability to move tenants from one farm to another. I gave the example earlier on where we failed some of our Brazilian customers up to US data centers. We're in the phase at the moment where the Brazilian data center is all up and running, and if you create a new PWA in Brazil, it will be in that data center. But we're still waiting for the okay from all the networking people to actually do the migration back again, the failback of those particular tenants. I don't know what the process would be. I mean, I know it's possible, and if there's a good reason for doing it, I'm sure we'd want to make it happen. But we can't always guarantee. Well, certainly there will be cases when you may not be in the same data center as where you really want to be. Yeah, but very good question. Thank you. This is really to do with the announcement that was made at the keynote. So it is still, it's basically saying you could use OLAP via OData. So OData is really just pulling the data somewhere else, and then you'd build your OLAP cube in that somewhere else. So it's really just a way of getting the data out of online, and then you can do whatever reporting you want to do in that environment. So you could still sort of build exactly the same cubes and the same slice and dice and everything else. So you'd be using SQL Server integration services, and then once you've got the data wherever you want it, you can use SSRS, Power BI, OLAP, whichever, any third-party reporting service as well. Yep, anything that you're used to using in OLAP in Project Server 2013, once you've pulled that out via SSIS, you can do whatever you need to do in it. I think we're 45 seconds to go, and I think there's a fairly quick turnaround on the room, so I don't want to hold up the next presenter. I'll be hanging around for a very short while, but I have got some other meetings to go to. But I'm here, I'm doing another couple of sessions today, and I should be around most of tomorrow as well. And on Thursday, I know some of the MVPs, I'll be meeting up with you guys. But thanks very much, and see you again.